Blog Talk Radio.
Charles Ross, another great show I have for you on today. I am going to be talking with Gerald Clyde II, and for over a decade, Gerald has been an independent film producer, director of Clyde Publishing, and he has worked in the motion picture industry for a great number of years, having worked on Alvin and the Chipmunks, Baby Driver, Spider-Man Homecoming, and is that the cartoon one or the movie one? We'll ask him about that. And over 100 independent projects. He is well-versed in the film industry. Most recently, he received documentary distribution for his film, The History of Cigars, which features J.C. Newman, the world's oldest American cigar company, and Habanas Cigar Lounge. And the documentary can be found on Amazon Prime Video, which I am a subscriber to, so I'm going to check that out. And he's got two books, The Universal Guide to Making Movies, and he just informed me he also has a book entitled The Universal Guide to Making Music Videos. Welcome to Your Personal Finance, Gerald. How are you doing today?
I'm awesome.
Great.
Thank you for having me on this show.
Yes. We appreciate that. Now, where are you from, Gerald?
I'm from Atlanta, Georgia, born and raised.
Oh, really?
But in the last couple of years, last 2 years, actually, I moved to Florida, then Albany, Georgia, then probably I may move back to Atlanta.
Okay. All right. That's unusual to have someone who was born and raised in the big ATL. And so how many years do you have in the motion picture industry?
Independently, probably 11, 12.
Okay. And, so have you ever worked out in Hollywood or done anything out there? I know you worked on, say, Spider-Man Homecoming, which is my favorite. Spider-Man Homecoming, is that the movie or cartoon? That's one of them is Miles Monroe. That's the Miles Morales, whatever.
Spider-Man Universe or something like that.
Yeah, Universe, whatever it is. Okay, right.
Yeah.
So not that one. So on Spider-Man Homecoming, what did you do on that project?
So on Spider-Man Homecoming, Magnificent Seven, Baby Driver, Alvin and the Chipmunks, Paternity Court. I actually was in the editorial department assisting the editors with their equipment, but in that sense, I actually got to see how like a major motion picture, a major television production is actually ran.
Oh, wow. So once they stopped filming and everything is in the can, how long does it take them, to edit a movie and get it ready for distribution?
So it depends on what film it is. I think, so say for instance, Paternity Court is a TV show. They were actually making the show in like an hour tops, and then they'll edit it probably in a day or so.
And oh, then, okay.
But for something like Spider-Man, I think I worked on the editing part for a few weeks.
Okay. I thought it would be longer than that. So once they get everything in the can, it only takes them a couple of weeks to get the film ready for distribution as far as the editing and pulling all the pieces together.
Yeah, so on that show, they actually had 5 editors on Spider-Man Homecoming.
Oh, wow. Working on different parts of the movie?
Yes.
Wow.
So you may have someone to edit the sound, someone to edit the beginning part, someone to edit the middle part, and things of that nature, and also assistant editors to help the main editors.
Big time stuff. So what kind of, you know, got you interested in being in the movie business, film business?
When I went to, it was a long time ago, when I probably seen Drumline with Nick Cannon.
Okay.
And I seen that movie and I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to make film. And then my mother, she got me a camcorder one time for Christmas. And then I just started filming from there. And I shot my first movie trailer in high school.
Wow. Okay. So, and now, you know, with the technology, like, you know, I've seen commercials for the iPhone, how, you know, you could film a movie using the iPhone because the resolution is so good. You remember back in the day, you know, on a phone, it was very fuzzy. You know, I don't even think there was video at
right.
that time, but it definitely was it wasn't very high quality. And I don't know what they're up to in terms of megapixels or whatever, 10 megapixels, whatever it is they call it. But, you know, I'm a sports photographer mostly, and I know some of the cameras I have, the things on some of these cameras have better resolution than what I have, you know, in terms of
right.
or marveling it. And, you know, I digress a little bit. Is it possible to shoot a movie or maybe a short, you know, 10, 15 minute, you know, movie on an iPhone or any other Android or anything like that? Is that really possible?
Oh, definitely. I actually,
really?
I actually filmed some music videos on the phone, and I actually
really?
Filmed like some little PSAs on the phone. So it's definitely possible.
Now, would you do that from a cost standpoint? Because some of those cameras can cost, you know, thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars. I mean, an iPhone, it might set you back $1,000 or so. So is this a cost issue? You would do that, or you just like, you know, fooling around with an iPhone on Android?
I just want to, me personally, I want to experience with it. But as far as cost, yeah, the cameras can get costly. And then
mm-hmm.
sometimes from a phone, you probably wouldn't get the true resolution that you would get from a camera, from an actual cinema camera and an actual cinema lens. But if you set it up right and then kind of probably color correct it and color grade it, it may turn out looking real good on a phone.
And so, this is curious. So, on an iPhone, on Android, a phone, can you shoot a movie and have it as being a broadcast quality, like in a movie theater, or that's just asking too much?
Oh no, it's potential. I haven't actually worked on the new iPhone. Or
okay.
the new Android, so it's potential.
That's interesting.
It's very
okay.
very possible.
So you know we're gonna get to the making the music videos because that's probably obviously a offshoot of making movies. Take us through you know which if you're thinking about doing an independent film. how do you get started? Obviously, you have to have a script, right? You know, but once you have a script, what is the next thing that you need to do? Take us through the process that you have to go through to get a film in the can. What is it that you have to look at?
That's exactly what I'm working on as far as my consulting. So I started consulting with people that actually want to make motion pictures. So from, like, are you talking about from someone who has no idea, like, the next steps, or someone who's been through it that just want a little help?
Well, if someone that would buy your book, I'm assuming. Well, okay, let's back up for a second. Who is the big? What's the audience for the book? Are you talking to or wanting people to buy it who have no experience in film, or these are people that have some knowledge, some skills, some training that just need a process? So, who's the audience for the book?
So the audience for the book may be a film student. Or someone that's interested in making, producing their own motion picture. So taking their idea from mind to movie. So the process for creating a motion picture is kind of difficult when you really don't have help. You kind of just trial and error in it. So, if you have a script, you got to make sure the script is in like a script format. You got to reread the script. You got to make sure the script flows, and then from there, you break down into budgeting. You have to budget out your script. Make sure you're not missing anything. So, like, even if your script calls for we'll say Sally is reading a book. That book has to be budgeted into that particular scene. So just depending on what type of book it is. And you can get away with using a book that you may have, but you may not have that particular book. So sometimes you would want to write around the things that you right around the things that you have for budget purposes for independent films, unless you're a major motion picture. But first, the script, yeah, the idea, the concept, and that's a whole way. The script is a whole area within itself. And then you want to go to, and that forms like development. Got to develop the script, develop your plan, develop the business around the film. And then you go into pre-production, and then you go into production, and then you go into post-production. Also, at the same time, while you're doing each of these phases for a independent producer or independent filmmaker, you'll want to be marketing as well throughout your entire process. And then
if you're starting at the beginning and you say marketing throughout the pro process, how would you do that if you're still just filming the movie? How would you market it? What would you be doing to market the movie? What would you be doing?
As far as taking pictures, just tweeting, posting, just giving people updates on the progress of your film. After the production is post-production. After post-production, you still want to do another marketing run for as far as the trailer, and then you go into distribution.
Okay. And if you're looking at, I mean, what kind of money can you make, I mean, and produce? Because the bottom line is that if you produce a movie, that you want to be able to make some money, you know, doing it, you know. And, give us an example. You can give us a range. But what would you do? Let's say on an independent film, what is it, 60 minutes, 90 minutes, somewhere around there?
Yeah, that's a feature film. So feature films are anywhere from 45 minutes and up. Short film can be 45 minutes and below, things like that. So it just depends on the actual film. I can tell you, like, Blair Witch Project, they had a budget of like $8,000 and they made a few million from it. So it just depends. It actually depends on how your film is, your audience, the distribution, your marketing. Similar to Paranormal Activity, they had a small budget compared to most Hollywood films, and they actually grossed a couple hundred million from it, and their own brand. They started a sequel and a sequel after that. So it just depends on your audience, what's your distribution plan, what's your marketing plan.
So I'm looking at your table of contents. We're just going to touch on some of these. What does a producer do?
So a producer, in that standpoint, from the universe of God to producing movies, is an independent producer who actually gets everything together to make the movie, and actually is hands-on making the movie. So in a major motion picture, a producer can be anybody. Someone can loan a camera and ask for a producer credit, and they'll be a producer for a major motion picture. Or they may have a star actor that they're connected with, and they can ask for producer credit. But in this sense, it's the person that's hands-on, that's getting everything together to make the film, that's handling the paperwork, dealing with the development, the pre-production, all the way to the distribution.
So when I see, and this is always, I see in feature movies, and some independent too, you see, you know, they start with the executive producer, and then a producer. So what's the difference between an executive producer and a producer?
So the executive producer is most likely the one that funds the film. That's who's backing the film.
So he's the money man.
The money man.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you could have five or six executive producers. So if I'm hearing you correct, so if I see a credit on a film where there's an executive producer, I'm assuming is a good assumption that he put in some money in the deal.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And so he or she may not have actual boots on the ground experience. They put in whatever amount of money and say, okay, you know, I'm getting some money, you know, off the profits. You know, they're profiting off the money. Okay. All right. And so then what's the producer?
As far as the executive producers, that's why you see a lot of films with probably five different other logos. Like you may see a lot of different productions on that one film, but a producer is the one that's hands-on, that's making sure the film gets made.
And it's my understanding that a producer, producers could have different jobs of what they're responsible for. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, because some could do location, they could do this and that and the other. So, you know, but a producer, if a certain someone has a credit as a producer, that means they're working on the film. They're actually boots on the ground. Would that be accurate?
Right.
Okay, got
right.
it. Next
and
producer,
someone that's getting the location. Depending on the film, they can get the credit of location scout.
Okay, all right. Trying to find some of these exotic locations and things like that. So another topic you have in your book is distribution. So talk to us about, you know, how does a film get distributed? And I guess, are we talking about independent or major motion? Is there a difference? Yeah. What I hear, like, for example, I see all these film festivals, and then you'll hear about, let's say, you know, a actor or actress or whatever, or a producer took his film to a film festival, and through the film festival, obviously the movie was previewed or seen, and then he came out of the film festival with a distribution deal. Does that happen? Is that kind of with independent projects that happens? Obviously, with major motion pictures, that probably doesn't happen. But with independent films, is that kind of, you know, what they do?
Yeah. With independent films, most of them go to the festival routes. You pay a certain amount of money to get to the festival managers to watch the film, to vote on the film, to either accept it or not accept the film. And then they have a festival run. So the festival run, some people, even though they may have gotten into the festival, that don't mean they will get distribution.
Okay.
So a festival is another way of marketing as well. Because if you get picked up by a festival, that can be something that you can market. Hey, I got into Sundance. But most of the major distributors like Lion Gates or Amazon, they'll go to have representatives at different festivals to scope out movies so they can put it in their independent categories.
Got it. And so it behooves you, if you're going to be an independent producer, is to go to these, for lack of a better word, I'm going to say an end game. In other words, okay, how am I going to make money on this, you know, when everything's said and done? In other words, how am I going to get my money back? What's a good budget for an independent film? What's a good, you know, budget that you can anticipate? You know, give me a low and then, you know, maybe a high.
Well, it's that's a difficult question because it just depends. Like, I shot my first feature film on like a shoestring budget, but everybody, like, and I say a shoestring budget, I probably spent like $1,000. And people went on to that. I put a few actors in their first film, and they went on to co-star with like Oprah, co-star with Jack Black, Anthony Mackie, and be on BET and all that. So if I would have stopped, even though I didn't really have a large budget, they probably wouldn't have been in their first feature film. And they probably wouldn't have got the roles that they had. But like our last film, we probably spent like roughly $20,000 to produce, to make. And what we did was that, we just went and put it on Amazon Prime, which was Poeta. That's a feature film. Mm-hmm. But as far as the documentary, The History of Cigars, which we got distribution for, I think we probably paid for gas. And
wow.
So, like I said, it just depends. Like, but as far as, it just depends on the film, depend on what type of film, depends on the script, depends on what's out in the script, depends on the end goal as well. So if your end goal is to say, I want to put my movie in a theater, or if you want a short theatrical release or a major theatrical release, it may cost a few $100,000 if you want to do it yourself. But like I said, it just depends on the script and the type of film.
And so it can be pretty lucrative, like you said. There are some movies that, you know, they went and spent, you know, $8,000, $5,000, you know, $20,000, and then make a couple of million dollars off the deal. So it's a
right.
Nowadays, you know, I guess with the technology, Gerald, you know, that the technology is such that, you know, you can shoot a film on an iPhone. Or, you know, some of the cameras that are out there that you can pick up at Best Buy or Office Depot, whatever, and you can shoot a film on it, you know. And if the content is good, if the acting is good, and, of course, the marketing, which is very important, is good, then, you know, chances are, you know, you could make some good money. So getting to the money part, so let's say you produce your film and you get a distributor. What type of deal, how's the money make? So if the movie is going to end up in the theaters, okay, you know, I'm assuming the distributor takes some percentage. What's the, how does the money work? How do you make money after you produce the film and you got it, and you're getting ready to distribute it? How do you make money?
So you make money either, so say for instance, if you go to a festival, and Amazon decides to take your film, they can give you a like a $2 million for the film or whatever they feel that your film is worth, and they can go on about their way. Y'all can separate like that. Or if you talk to a distributor that is not buying the film but that actually distributes the film and put it on platforms like Hulu, Amazon, and if it's popular enough, Netflix, Redbox, Walmart, and things like that, you may get like a 30-70 split, or it just depends on the type of distribution you go with. So,
So when you say a 30-70 split, 30-70 in your favor?
Yes, in your favor.
Okay, they get 30%, you get 70%. So so let's look at if it goes into the theaters, right?
Mm-hmm.
How does that work? Because if you buy tickets, you know, $10 ticket, I'm assuming the movie theater, you know, takes their cut. Run us through the of an independent movie ending up in the theater, and what kind of money you can make. How are you going to get your money? Let's say you're in a 70-30 split. Your movie ends up in the movie theater. Go from there. How are you going to make your money? What do you get out of that when the person goes and buys a ticket? How does that work? How does it come back to you?
So with that, once an independent, if an independent film goes to theater, the distributor will make a deal with the theaters. The theaters get around 50%, and the distribution gets 50%. And then from that 50%, that's where you get your cut.
Okay.
It once a 2-week run normally will be the 2-week run will probably be in the favor of the distributor sometimes. So I have to get the numbers, but it just depends, like I said, on the distribution company. So sometimes it may go into the favor of a 80-20 or 50-50, as far as 50 to the distribution, 50 to the theaters, and then after a couple of weeks, the theater starts to get more profit, more revenue, a bigger split.
Okay.
And then for the independent, they still get that. They get the side. They're on the side of the distribution company, so it's not like a three-way split.
So an independent movie that ends up in the movie theaters, and the ticket costs $10. $5 goes to the movie house, $5 go to the distributor, and then your 70-30 comes out, 70-30 comes out of that. So you'll get,
right,
doing my math right, you're going to get about $3, something like that, per, you know, per ticket, if that makes,
right,
sense. Okay, all right. And then you say the other
way. Like I said, it all depends on the distribution and your deal.
Okay, so you get your money. The other option is for a distributor to pay you, you know, $1 million, $2 million for the film. And do at that point, do they own the film and that you've given up all your rights? They could do whatever they want with it. Is that,
right,
is that the case? Okay, so you don't have,
right,
any rights to the movie once you do that.
Correct.
Oh,
but
wow.
But it's also another way, though.
Okay.
So it's something called four-walling, where you can actually rent out a screen yourself, and probably, I think it's possible that Master P did this. He rented out a few theaters and four-walled his film. I got the hookup too. So you rent out the theater yourself and have a theatrical run yourself instead of waiting for someone to pick it up, and then you get all your money from the ticket sales.
Okay, so you go to a movie theater and say, "Hey, I'm assuming you're going to rent out the movie theater for that time. You're going to pay a fee,
right,
to rent the movie for that time, for the 2 hours or 3 hours, whatever the movie is, and then you take all the ticket sales, basically."
Right.
Okay. All right.
So,
and
you don't actually rent the whole theater, but the screen.
The screen, yeah. Okay, you rent a room, because now you have 8-plex and 16-plex, so you just rent one movie theater and say, okay, I'm going to just collect all the rent, I mean, all the ticket sales from that. And I guess you have to run that for weeks and weeks, you know, and they'll do a lot of marketing costs to get people to come to the movie. So that's the other part of it. Because I'm assuming when you do a distribution deal, you know, whether they buy it outright or, you know, you enter into a percentage deal, they're factoring in their cost of marketing. Is that, would that be correct?
Right. So,
okay.
So for the companies that you go to that do a percentage deal, they really, most of the time, they don't do marketing. So you'll still have to do your own marketing.
So if on an independent film and you got a 50-50 split with a distributor, then you got to do your own marketing.
Right.
Wow. What do they do? So what do they bring to the table? They bring, what is it that the distributor brings to the table that makes it so valuable to split the money with them?
So basically the platforms. So you need an aggregator, like a person that's already has a relationship with people like places like platforms like iTunes, platforms like Hulu, Netflix, Redbox, things of that nature.
So the distributor, you're buying into his network of points of distribution, in other words, that they're going to get you on,
correct,
iTunes and all that kind of stuff, or they're going to get you to movie theaters. You know, they have a connection,
right,
to the movie theaters as well. Okay. And but you got to do your own marketing as far as materials and advertising, you know, newspaper or whatever, or radio or TV, whatever you're going to do to market, you know, that out of that. Okay. All right. That sounds interesting, you know, because I know when you hear about these, and we're going to just transition a little bit into the major motion picture ones, the big blockbusters that spend $100 million on a movie, and they may spend another $20 or $30 million marketing the movie, and obviously they have to sell a lot of tickets to make that money back, you know. Now, I've heard life, Darryl, I was in the banking business, okay, and this is in the 80s, okay, and we used to sell limited partnerships to movies, and the movie companies would come, one of those ever, they'd have a limited partnership, and you could buy at $5,000 a clip an interest in a bank of movies that they're putting together. And they might raise $100, $200 million, you know, selling limited partnerships. I don't know if they still do that or not. But anyway, one of the things that I found out, and I'm assuming this is the case, is that before they, produce a movie or even the first camera rolls, they have sold the rights to it internationally. At that time in the 80s, it would have been HBO. Then I'm trying to think. Well, it would be movies, HBO. It could be TV. It could be, you know, like the networks. It could be, when I say theaters, you know, dollar movies and all that. So they've already sold, they front-ended and sold, the rights, you know,
right,
to certain aspects. So they know they're going to make their money back. They say, okay, International gave me $10 million. The movie theaters, I'm going to make, you know, $50 million. HBO's giving me $10 million. You see what I'm saying? Does that still happen today?
Yeah, that still happens. Say, for instance, you go to, you have Denzel Washington in your movie.
Right.
You can go to one place and say, hey, I got Denzel. I want you to cover this percentage for this distribution in Africa. I want you to distribute in Africa on these particular networks.
Right.
Then they can keep going from there.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Because I know, you know, a lot of times, and that was back in the 80s, I didn't know if they still sell those. They probably might sell those privately to private investors who, in my understanding, before one camera rolls, they've got all these angels, as they call them, just like on Broadway, that, you know, these rich people that invest in these movies, mm-hmm, because there are tax write-offs and all that kind of stuff that accrue to them for doing that, you know. So I guess if we dumb it down, for lack of a better word, to an independent film, you could go out and raise money from investors and, you know, 5,000 here, 10,000 here, and guess what? You got your movie financed, and you take off a lot of risk. I know a lot of documentaries get done with that, and you know, things of that nature. Have you done any documentaries? Right. Just seriously, have you done any I guess you have with the, I think.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
The History of Cigars, a product of me, the documentary. The Legend of Mr. George is actually a short documentary. The Politics of Hair, I've done a few documentaries. My wife actually said that's my specialty. But I actually like, I like storyline and feature films.
Storylines and feature films. So, you know, yeah. So the big production movie houses, I mean, big budgets, a lot of people. I'm always amazed. Me and my wife are avid moviegoers. We go, I mean, we've been distraught because we haven't been able to go to the movies. And we like to sit through and watch the credits. And these big blockbusters, I mean, the credits are rolling for 5-10 minutes of all these people that work. I mean, it's a big, big production. It's like having a business. A business that, of course, obviously
it is,
would be short term in nature, because then it goes away after the, you know, after the production. What's the time frame for roll up to big motion pictures? What's the time frame for a major motion picture to get done? How long does it take from the script, you know, being approved all the way to getting it out in the theaters? How long is that normally? Is that process?
Oh man, it just depends on in this business, it depends on who you are, who you know, and what company it is. So I can give you a few examples. One movie may take 5 years because the script was sitting on an executive's desk and they decided it was time to make that movie. Then from the script is already made, so then it may take 6 months to film, for 6 months to prep, pre-production to production, and they may take 3 months to 6 months to make sure the editing and the screening is right. Then they may take 6 months to put it out. for marketing. So, but like, right, it could. But Tyler Perry's movie on A Fall from Grace, I think he shot that in probably 10 days. And similar to Acrimony, I think he shot that in 8 to 10 days, 8 to 12 days or something like that. So it just depends.
Now, he's speaking of Tyler Perry, he is cranking out some stuff. And
yeah.
Okay, you're a movie guy, okay? I know, I think it was earlier this year, Tyler Perry came out with a tweet, I think on Twitter or whatever. He had a stack of scripts and said he writes all his scripts for all his productions. And I thought about that for a second. I'm like, okay, I mean, I'm a writer. I've written 2 books. I've never written a script. Mm-hmm. I did one in college. That's a lot of writing.
Oh, yeah.
Is that even feasible to do? I just can't imagine someone, and I don't know how many shows. Well, he was doing TV shows. So you're not talking about one script for a movie. You're talking about, what, 20 scripts for a season? For,
right.
He has a cartoon thing or something coming on Nickelodeon, I think, now. I saw an advertised for it yesterday or something like that. Is that just physically possible to do that?
It just depends on your, I know I keep saying it depends, but if you have the time to sit there and write and come up with the concept, like he may have someone typing it out and he's talking about it, but I'm not sure, because
I think he was taken to task by some folks in the industry saying that, you know, all these writers out here, all these black folks, you know, that need a job, and you're writing all your stuff. I mean, first of all, you know, if you're writing about a certain, you know, I think Fall from Grace, you know, people took issue with some of the scenes in there, that there was a guy in the background. I mean, it was all kind of stuff. And I'm
right.
Thinking, like, okay, you know, you're an editor. You're like, how did they miss that, you know?
Right. But sometimes
when
you're resting and not really paying attention to the details and you're really worried about the deadline, you'll probably watch it once or twice. You probably watched it once and said it's a go.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but I'm just saying someone has to be watching, you know, saying, hey, the guy in the background, he's eating air, you know, he's not.
Right.
I'm just
that's,
saying.
That's where Sidney come in there.
Right, right. Someone has to be, you know, responsible. I know a little bit about film production. I don't know a whole lot, but I know enough to know that somebody should be watching the quality control, and then when you preview
right.
it, okay, so after all that's done. Okay, you're done with the movie. Now you have to watch it from front to back and say, okay, let me just check this out. And somebody missed that, you know. And I know that he has to crank out this stuff. He paid, I don't know how many hundreds of million dollars for the studio. So, you know, he has to crank stuff
mm-hmm.
out, you know what I'm saying? I mean, more power to him. But I just see sometimes the quality of what he's doing is not at the level where it should be. But, you know, God bless him, man.
Right.
That's your formula. You know, like McDonald's, you turning out hamburgers, man. Just hamburgers. You got a cookie cutter approach. Then get it done. But I'm just saying that there's so many people out there that they could use a job, and some of the quality, you know, that's going out there. And he has a major motion studio. You know, God bless him. But I just, you know, think that sometimes that, you know, you shortchange yourself in terms of the quality. He knows his audience. You know. He knows that what they're looking for, so you know, more power to him. I'm never going to disparage anybody who's made a buck along. So you got to be fantastic. This is stuff. I don't want to get into that because I want him to call me. No.
Yeah, he may have.
But
a formula,
no, I'm just talking about
how he writes script.
Exactly.
As well,
so
he
what
may
cookie cutter approach and. I know some lawyers took him to task with some of the things in the courtroom stuff that would never happen. You know, that, you know, you don't have I mean, for one, if you're doing a legal show about courts, you need an advisor that knows how that's supposed to go. You can't make that stuff up on your own. You can't say, oh,
right,
I'm just going to do this and that and the other. Well, no, that's not how the legal system works. That's not accurate. That's not factual. And you lose credibility, you know. So anyway.
Right.
But he's making money.
That's where research come in at as well.
Exactly. You know, and because I know one of the things, the formulas I said, and see if this is right, I heard that for every day, normally on a major motion picture, you will shoot about a minute worth of screen time. So with that being said, it takes at least 90 days to film a movie, with the assumption that, you know, every day, maybe I'm saying on average, so every day you're putting can about a minute worth of material. So in 90 days, you have 90 minutes worth of material. Is that formula still work? The minute of content for every day of shooting?
So generally, I believe they try to knock out at least 4 to 5 pages. So generally, a minute is one page. So
okay,
one page of script is one minute of screen.
Okay.
So, and then it just depends as far as, okay, is this scene a fight scene, an action scene? This may take longer than this next page where he's just walking and talking to himself.
Right. I got it. So
but generally, they try to knock out 4 to 5 pages for the script
a day. Okay, and that may be a, and depending on what it is, it could be a minute or two of actual, you know, screen time in terms of, because, you know, but that, okay. All right, so now you got
to... It's 4 to 5 minutes.
Oh, 4 to 5 minutes. So 4 or 5 minutes a day. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, all right, that's cool, you know. So let's move into making music videos. Is that any different? First of all, how long typically does it take to make a music video? How many days does it take?
That one, it depends again, because a music video is an art as well. So you can film a music video overseas, and you can take a few weeks or a few days, or you can film a music video on a white wall or a black wall in a green room or on a green screen, and that can take a day. I actually tested myself to see how quick I can film and edit a music video, and it's not the best music video, but it still had a storyline, and it was in one location, and I actually filmed that, edited it, and gave it to the person within, I would say, at the top, 3 hours.
Okay.
So,
so doing a music video, what's the range of prices from, you know, low budget all the way up to major, you know, music, you know, performer, major entertainment like a Beyonce or who else? In my generation, you know, I would have said Michael Jackson or Prince or something like that. How much would a music video cost from the low end to the high end? You know.
So you're looking at, say for instance, someone filming a music video who's just starting out, they may charge anywhere from $50 to $150. But if you're big time celebrity, I would say, like a Beyonce, you may be looking at to spend like $1 million for that music video.
Whoa. Wow. Okay. No. And I'm going to reveal a little bit of my ignorance here. entertainers are still doing music videos. where do they distribute this stuff? Is it YouTube, MTV, BET? Where do they distribute these music videos now? Because I don't watch them. I'm just curious.
So it's still MTV still around, YouTube, and and they also use it for their reels as well. So they basically distribute it anywhere that a music video plays.
Okay, because I like I said, I know BET had a, you know, that's pretty much all they had on their network, and I know MTV now has not movies and TV shows and everything, mixing up the portfolio of what they have on the network, you know, to some extent. So I'm just curious, spending $1 million, I guess, you know, that's to advertise. And, you know, I haven't bought a CD and I don't know when, you know, I get all my music from YouTube and strip the audio and video.
I still watch the videos.
Yeah, people still watch them. I have a YouTube and I have, you know, different topics and stuff like that, but I haven't bought a CD in God knows when, you know, I mean,
right.
And maybe because I'm 62, I'm too old, you know, to do that stuff, but I'm sure the young folks are buying CDs. I guess they are. I haven't seen anybody in Walmart walking out with a CD yet, so so I'm just saying.
I actually bought a CD probably 2 years ago.
Just
to support an artist. And then my son actually put like pennies in a CD player, so the CD player didn't work anymore for the car. So
that's messed up. Well, now all the cars have the gadgets. You know, you plug your, have a USB port,
yeah, Bluetooth.
You plug it in there, and you can play. Yeah, you got streaming and all that kind of stuff going on. So, you know, cars have just advanced. You know, anything that's on your phone, you can play through your car now. If you have a late model car in the last what 5 to 6, 7, 8 years. You know, you could play anything through your car, and now you have streaming services like Sirius XM, and you know, a couple others, I guess, that are out there. So it gets really attractive.
Like iTunes and Spotify.
Yeah, but I'm hearing that, you know, I'm going to go to Netflix and get a deal. Everybody's getting a deal from Netflix, the president, everybody. You know, I figure, you know, I could go get a deal, you know, from Netflix. What typically happens, like with a Netflix deal, do they just say, okay, we're going to give you $100 million and you produce 10 movies for us or whatever, you know, that you're going to star in? And when they do that, do they get up right to the movies? Like, is Netflix actually buying the movie from them, whatever content? Is that what they're doing?
So, well, I'm not really a partner with Netflix, but what I hear is Netflix only does, for lack of a better word, what Netflix does, they buy the movie for a certain period of time.
Oh, okay.
And then instead of giving you a percentage from every sale, so say for instance, a difference between Netflix and Amazon. Netflix, you'll have to find someone who's a aggregator for Netflix. Make sure the movie is a little popular, and they'll give you a lump sum for the movie, and then after that, after your contract is over with, then you get all your rights and all your you get everything back, and they take it off of Netflix unless it's a very popular movie on Netflix. But with Amazon Prime Video, you can put your film on there yourself, and every view that you get from Amazon, you get a percentage from it.
Oh, okay. So, you know, on Amazon Prime, because you have to rent those for $5 or whatever the case may be, and
right, or
you know,
free with ads.
Excuse me?
Or it's free with ads.
Oh, it's free with ads. Okay. So you would get a, if it was $5, then you make whatever the percentage cut you negotiate or whatever the standard is, that's what you get. You get for $5, you might get the 70-30 split. You get three, they get two, I guess, something like that, make moves like that. Interesting. Okay.
Well,
so
I think
Amazon
is 50%.
50%, 50-50. So does Amazon scrutinize what they put on there, or can anybody put something on there?
They do go through a checklist, a check process on what is on their site. So, yeah. But if it's something that you believe people will watch, they believe people will watch, and you believe people will watch, they'll put it on there. They even have, tutorials on there. So, they have, they have how-tos on there as well. So,
well, that's interesting because there's been a project that one day I'm going to do. Me and my buddies have been talking about. I went to the University of Georgia and graduated in 79. So, we've been rumbling around in our head about a movie representing our time there and what happened, and all that kind of stuff. So we've been playing around with that a little bit. That'd probably be a little expensive than an independent movie because, I would think it would have to be a period movie, meaning, as you well know, it had to go back to 1975 with the dress and all that. Similar to what you're seeing now on American Soul, the Soul Train story with all the, dress and everything. So that gets kind of expensive. So I couldn't do that on an independent budget, I don't think, because, that would get pretty expensive because the buildings don't, are not the same. UGA has grown up and all that kind of stuff. But that's just something that one day, if I put together a script, I'll give you a call.
Definitely.
We could work it out. But
even
I know
before
it's
the script.
Say what now?
I said even before the script, I can help you develop it so you can probably shoot around some of the things that you may think is too hard. And as far as an independent budget, an independent budget can go up to $1 million+, but it's still an independent film because you're not really working with major MGM or Warner Brothers, things of that nature. You're kind of backing it yourself independently.
Yeah, maybe that's something I'll do in retirement in 2 or 3 years when the wife and I retire. I'll start writing that script and have some ideas in my head. It would kind of be a cross between Cooley High and what's that movie? Stomp the Yard? The Spike Lee movie?
Stomp the Yard.
Yeah, it would be a cross between Cooley High and Stomp the Yard, so to speak, because it would have to have early 70s kind of music going back to, in high school and then all the way through, through college and stuff. So that's kind of, the thought in my mind because I love that movie Cooley High and Stomp the Yard, two great movies, that I think that don't get enough attention. Those are classics. My wife doesn't like to watch those classic movies for some reason. So, I love documentaries too. Yeah, I was watching Superfly again, Shaft, Sheba Baby. And looking at them now, you just know that. Oh wow, this movie was really done on a low budget. I think Superfly was done like $200,000 or something like that. By a couple of dentists, I heard, put some money together and did Superfly. And you can tell now that, movies have progressed, but back in the 70s, that was seeing black folks on the screen, that was dynamite, as they say.
Right, exactly.
Hey, Gerald, so let people know how they can get these two books, and if you have a website, you have about a minute or so left to go, how they can get these books.
We're actually working on Cloud Publishers, the site, but you can get The Universal Guide to Producing Movies and The Universal Guide to Making Music Videos. And I also have a devotional, a Christian devotional called You May Be, But God Is. and it's all on. You can get it from Amazon Prime. You can get the Universal Guide to Producing Movies, and You May Be But God Is on Amazon, Walmart, anywhere that sells books. And I'm also working on an album called Affirmation Music, and my single will be released pretty soon. The album drops October 26th. So the single is called Money On Me. And basically, affirmations is just affirming that something that you want, something that you see. So a lot of people don't affirm that they want peace and prosperity. But I'm doing this in more of a hip-hop standard. Like, you want... you don't want to be broke. You want money on you all the time. So it's just something that you'll listen to in order to start your day.
Okay. All right. Well, reach back out to us when that comes on, and we'll get a chance, because I can play music, as you may have heard right before the show. So, yeah, do please reach back out, and we'll give you a chance to share that with our listeners. So, you know, that could be something that in your marketing strategy. You know, thank you so much, Gerald, for being on the show. Much success to you. Keep us posted on your projects.
Thank you, Charles.
All right.
Good luck on the show. Thank you for everything. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Yeah, have a good one now. Take care now.
All right, you too.
All right, so that ends this edition of Your Personal Finance with Dr. Charles Ross. That was an interesting segment. You say, well, why did I have a guy to come on to talk about making independent movies? Well, this is a money show, and there might be some budding, you know, directors or producers or actors or actresses or folks wanting to get into film industry. So that gives us an insight into an area that we are not represented very, very well. But one of the things that obviously, you know, needs to happen is raising that money, you know. And if you're looking, you know, as I had shared before, is that if you don't come out of this pandemic with more knowledge or a skill or a side hustle, then something's wrong. And your side hustle can be representing a company that I'm affiliated with called Financial Education Services. And, you know, it's a program that allows you to sell something we call the Protection Plan membership, where you sell people a program that allows them to, one, restore their credit, build their credit, pay off their debt, monitor their credit, get identity monitoring, insurance, and then on the other side, you've got the financial planning stuff like budgeting, savings and net worth, wills and trusts, all this nice stuff that you probably wanted to have access to, but perhaps thought it was too expensive. But if you're interested in that, then I would suggest you do one of two things. You give me a call, and if you got a pen ready, you might want to write this down, 404-272-4633. That's 404-272-4633. Or if you prefer to email, you can email me at charlesross@outlook.com, charlesross@outlook.com. My wife and I are using this program. First of all, you know I'm passionate about personal finance and getting a financial life in order, so it's what I'm about. But the bonus is that in addition to helping people with their finances, we get a chance to earn some money. And that's the great thing. It's a side hustle. Something you can do part-time from your home, from your phone. And I think that you would at least need to consider it as a sideline business, and to get involved. You know, what sideline business can you get involved for less than $300? Yep, for less than $300. You can have your own business. Your website, the marketing materials are superb, the support is superb. You meet some great people who are motivated about making money and helping people improve their financial lives, helping them improve their credit score. So if that's something that you're interested in, if you're listening to this podcast, just hit me up at charlesross@outlook.com or text me or call me at 404-272-4633. 833. Thank you for listening to another edition of Your Personal Finance with Dr. Charles Ross. Once again, this program is about learning, helping you learn how to budget, save, and invest your hard-earned money.